Welcome to another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. Today we're joined here by Andy Law. Hi, Andy.
Hello.
I'm Jazz Berry, and Andy is one of Lid's best-selling authors. He's also an extremely successful marketer, internationally renowned speaker, and Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. So Andy is the author of Implosion, what the internet has really done to culture and communication, published in 2013. Implosion, as you might have guessed, concerns itself with the impact that the internet is having on society and business, and claims that it is driving culture inwards instead of outwards. The book offers a controversial insight into where we are headed and predicts an exciting future. But now, 3 years later, Andy is in the process of publishing his second book in his internet trilogy, which will be called Upgraded, How the Internet Has Modernized the Human Race. So Upgraded explores how the internet has upgraded the human race. We can now go anywhere, see everywhere, communicate when we're not communicating. And we can even be present when we are dead. So if you're as baffled by this as I am, then keep listening and hopefully Andy can explain a little more. He's going to be interviewed by my colleague Miro. Hello, Miro.
Hello.
So let's kick off with some questions. Here we go.
Yeah, great, Andy. It's great to have you here today. And first of all, Upgraded is out this May in 2016. So can you explain a little bit better for our audience? What is the premise of the book and how does it differ from Implosion?
Right, let me take the second part first. Implosion looked at the first 20 years of the internet. And what we did when the internet arrived, bearing in mind that we didn't ask for it, it wasn't needed, and it didn't come to solve a problem, what we did was we toyed with it. We examined ourselves with it. For many years, the first 10 Instagram pictures we all took together of ourselves, of our toes, of clouds, of coffee cups. It was all very, very close to us. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving out. So Implosion, if you like, is very much book one. Upgraded is book two, and Upgraded is now, here we are 20 years later, and we're beginning to do things that we simply did not realise we could do. The simple addition of a hashtag into Instagram has turned Instagram into what is arguably now the biggest social network of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Instagram has had immense growth. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, it's forecast to be, you know, the second biggest social media platform, mm-hmm. Upcoming this year. And your book is called Upgraded. But would you say that the internet is a hindrance, perhaps, to us, the human race? Particularly with regards to social interaction and culture, as we just touched upon some social media. And with this in mind, if the internet were to go, you know, on an even bigger global scale, as more developing markets and developing countries are getting access to it, wouldn't we then just be rendered powerless with, you know, fewer surviving skills than previous generations and just probably being dumbed down?
Well, the internet is the biggest human creation of all time. There's more bits of data in cyberspace than there are stars in outer space.
Wow.
We have built something that is utterly colossal in front of our very eyes, and it continues to grow. So if you think about it, it will always be the biggest thing we've ever built. So it's not surprising that we're surrounded by it. It's on top of us. It's inside us. It's all over us. And for many people, it is certainly overwhelming. I liken, and this is why I called it Upgraded, I liken its arrival and its impact on us to the development of the opposable thumb so many hundreds of thousands of years ago. And when the opposable thumb first came, over a period of time, we learned to hold things, throw things, climb trees, escape predators, develop as a civilization. We then began to develop speech a few hundred thousand years later. The impact of the opposable thumb and speech led to culture, but it didn't happen overnight. Here we are, just a mere 20, 25 years or so into the internet, and we think we know everything? I don't think so. So I think what I'm trying to say here is, let's just press the pause button and look at what we can actually do. And we've hinted in the introduction about some of the things. I mean, the reason why I say we're communicating when we're not communicating is that when you put a preference into your smartphone for something you like, or you upgrade a profile somewhere, a machine talks to a machine, talks to a machine, goes around the world, and at some point, some stage in the future, someone will send you a push notification and talk back to you. See, we're having multiple conversations all the time.
I see, and this leads into our next question, which is, if the internet has been so effective and so successful in upgrading the human race, what does it mean for the approximately 50% of the global population that currently does not have access to it? Because I know that we touched upon, you know, upcoming markets and developing countries, but currently, you know, half of us don't have access to it, and how can we cope with that?
Well, it's only a matter of time. And I was talking to someone in Boston, Massachusetts last summer, who was referring to what he called the big boys game in Silicon Valley, which is the Facebook game, the Google game, the Amazon game. Who will speak to the whole planet first together? And it's, you know, and it's going to happen. So whilst there are many people who are denied access to the internet, let's not forget that the United Nations has made access to the internet a human right, as much as access to water and food and health and education. So it is only a matter of time. And Facebook are throwing up satellites into the sky, Google are doing as much as they can. There's a race to get everybody connected. Now, when we are all connected, we grow again. And one of the conversations I had in the last 18 months or so was with a guy called Vint Cerf, who was one of the original pioneers in the 70s of ARPANET and the initial version of the internet. I was talking to him about what happens when we're all connected, and he said, Andy, I'm way beyond that. I'm looking at interplanetary internet, because the internet will be a wonderful way for us to connect with the machines that are roaming and roving around on Mars. We're already talking to machines. Talking to one on Mars is not a problem.
That seems like a... it seems almost like sci-fi, but actually, if you think about it, we might not be that far off from being able to achieve it, and that's something amazing. But going back onto developing markets and countries that are currently, you know, and cultures being connected to the internet, do you think that there's any perhaps dangers or even exploitation? Because what comes to my mind, for example, is Facebook's recent expansion in India, right? And that was met with quite a lot of criticism by many people there, saying that, as a matter of fact, Facebook will be able to control information and the way it's distributed to people. So even though they will be connected, what they will be able to see can in fact be considered censorship. How can we avoid, in a way, the censorship of the internet?
Well, Facebook is only one player. It is obviously the biggest player at the moment. But access to the internet, unless governments decide to switch certain things off, gives you access to everything. And so it's not, if you like, that Facebook is the only channel of information that will be there. There will be new local news channels, there will be foreign news channels, and you name it. I think the thing about the internet is this. In Implosion, I talked about how access to the internet had dropped to the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And in fact, that spurred, that little diagram I did in the book, spurred a number of other diagrams that put Wi-Fi at the bottom and so on and so forth. At the top of Maslow's hierarchy is something called self-actualization. Okay, where who we think we most could be. The issue with the internet is now, I think we've broken through that, and we're becoming an omnipotent, omnipresent version of our species. Anything we see, anything we want, we get. And that has issues, undoubtedly has issues. But don't forget, the internet is neither good nor bad. It's not a, it's not a, it didn't set out to be an evil thing or a good thing. It was a simple enabler. So it's we who use it can use it for devastating good or devastating bad.
Yeah. And as mentioned in the introduction of the podcast, Upgraded claims that we can be present even when we're dead. And that's actually quite unprecedented unless you were a very important person in the past and you kind of get documented within history. But that's no longer the case, and the internet has changed that. You recently gave a beautiful example of these in a piece for the Huffington Post about David Bowie turning his death into art. Do you want to tell us some more about that? I mean, are there any other examples of this that you can think of?
Well, yeah, I think David Bowie's artistic piece, now we all have had time to digest it, has left a kind of indelible data stain, positively, I think, for many people around the world, about what it is like to go through the process of dying. And it was timed, it was a piece of work, it was a piece of culture, it was a piece of art, whichever way you want to look at it, that has allowed many people to look at it and focus on it and actually reflect back to themselves about their final moments. I have met a mother who is dying of cancer, who is uploading all of her daily conversations, cooking, washing, shopping, working, in meetings, having a bath, combing her hair, brushing her hair, all these things, and talking to her children, who are in their sort of early teens, so that when she's gone, she will be able to leave forever a conversational, natural imprint of herself in cyberspace. And it's, you may say, well, there were always photographs. And there were always photographs. But that was about it. This is a novel, a biography, an autobiography, a movie. It's everything you would ever want it to be, all wrapped up in one. And I think, there are, now you can be as famous in your family as a star is famous around the world.
Wow.
That's very thought provocative. And do you think that the internet is, capable of anything? Like, for example, facilitating time travel in the future?
Well, I don't think so. I'd like to be proved wrong. But something is happening with time, and if you think that time is a very simple equation, it's speed over distance, it's the miles per hour. Now, in the same period of time, we are travelling much further because of our ability to travel through the internet. So right now, within less than 30 seconds, you could be at a webcam looking at a Bali resort and seeing what the weather's like. We could be anywhere, we could be around the world, wherever we want to be. That ability to do more, to go further in the same period of time, means we think we're speeding up. And I think at one level we are speeding up, and we are thinking, my God, life is travelling, it's moving faster and faster and faster. But at the same time, something else is happening, which is we are disintermediating desire. Desire is actually a period of time where you wish for something and wait for something.
Mm-hmm.
I last Sunday read a review of a piece of music in the Sunday Times. I bought it on Amazon. Less than 50 seconds later, mm-hmm, I was listening to it. So what we're doing in that to ourselves is that we are taking out the whole delay process, and we are going straight for the centre, for the middle of what we want.
Okay, and this kind of leads me into our next question, actually, and that is, what would you say are the most important kind of part of Web 2.0? I know you just mentioned being able to buy, for example, music, and that feeds into stuff like marketplaces and communications and bringing communities Perhaps can you give us three examples of parts of this web that have become just important to us?
Well, you mentioned science fiction, and I quote examples in the book, and when I give talks, as I recently did in Australia and in Israel, I begin by saying this is not science fiction. So, for example, the Book of Icelanders is a wonderful example of where internet-related technology is taking us. The Book of Icelanders was a program set up by the government of Iceland to disinter the bones of buried people, extract the DNA, and build a DNA data bank of genealogy in the country. A smart aleck thought, well, hang on, what if all the live people donated their data as well? Then actually we can connect everybody up. Mm. But we could go one step further, which is we're a small island of only 350,000 odd people, 400,000. What if we built an app that you donate your DNA data to? Mm. And when you go out on a date, you put your smartphone on the table next to the date of your choice. And if the phones bump and buzz, you're related.
Oh my gosh.
Now, this is dating by data.
Wow.
Okay? It's actually happening right now. And it's been happening for a couple of years or so now. So I could give you many examples, but I like that one because these things grow up under our noses. We accept them when we take them, and often we don't understand the ramifications of them. And I think this is the point. What does it all mean? And I really end the book by saying, actually, in many respects, learning coding at school is not the point. Mm. Right? Learning how to be an extra human with extra capability on the internet is the point. And what is being done to educate us as a race to manage this enormous power on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think as we've gone through, you know, the generation, each one gets better and better at using it, and it kind of becomes almost part of, you know, they're hotwired with it, you know, especially children and teenagers nowadays. It's essentially second nature to them to be able to use the internet and advance using it. And I think that's a great point. And finally, this is the question that we ask all of our guests. Is what are you currently reading at the moment?
I'm reading Seamus Heaney's Aeneid Book 6. Oh. I'm a classicist by nature and by training and by education. For me, it was always more than a hobby but less than a career.
Yeah.
It's becoming a little bit more now, and for anyone who is a classicist, Aeneid Book 6 sits in the kind of upper quartile of greatest pieces of literature ever written, and Seamus has done a fantastic job, and I'm reading it and rereading it, and also listening to Ian McEwan, who's read it as a podcast on BBC. His beautiful
voice.
Gandalfian voice.
Yeah. Well, brilliant. Thank you very much, Andy, for joining us. So Andy's new book, Upgraded, will be out in May, like we said earlier. It sounds really interesting. I'm definitely excited to read it. So if you'd like any more information about Andy's book, or if you'd like a link to his blog, you can find that in the description, along with all of the LID social media. So that's LID Publishing on Twitter and Facebook, and also LID Publishing on Instagram, which is just, you know, so up and coming. So thank you very much for joining us, and see you next time.
Thank you.